Those guys have always been in my corner, and still talk to them a lot, you know, to this day. I couldn't ask for, you know, better people, you know, friends, and I consider them family. That's good people right there. So, you know, I consider them real to me.
That was Browns running back Kareem Hunt talking about facing his former team, the Kansas City Chiefs. Let's say hello to Stan Weber now. Stan, good morning. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And one of the things that is fun about doing this show, because you guys do 4 hours and you lay your hearts out there and talk about your families, and we talk about behind-the-scenes things. I love talking to Jake. Only on this show do I find myself talking about behind-the-scenes things. So I'm going to do it again today. Okay, is that okay, Jake, first of all?
Do it.
And you can talk about whatever you want.
Okay, I mean, because
you are the last person I'm worried games, about what you're going to say. You're the last person, so.
When I broadcast games, and you're the radio announcer, one of the things that we always remember is no one cares where you are in a stadium, okay? Like in the NFL stadiums now, they're putting them in the end zone upper deck where you can't see so they can sell more suites, right? I mean, it's one thing to sit up in a helicopter like you do at Arrowhead, but at least you can see down on the field, you can get your binoculars. But sometimes they put you over in a hole where you got to look around a column. You know, I mean, it's no one cares, okay? Just broadcast the game. They do not want to hear, well, I can't see very well up here. We weren't treated. So the reason why I want to tell you that is I fully understand that as a pro, I'm supposed to say, everything's perfect and let's roll. But I got to let everybody know, just in case, I can barely hear anything. So I don't know what is my headphones here, but I just want to say, if Steven talks to me and I don't answer correctly.
Try that middle jack.
I did.
And didn't work either?
I'm just saying.
We'll get you some new headphones.
But I just thought, people like to know the behind the scenes things. I mean, we're on 38, right?
Yeah, we are.
We're on TV, so they can see the behind the scenes things. They see me.
They see it all.
Yeah, they see it. So I'm just saying, Steven, I can hear you barely, like you're whispering in my ear, like one of those ear tests. Like, can you hear me? I can't hear him.
Beep, beep. Hello there, Stan Weber. How are you this morning?
I'm doing okay. So Nate, you need to give me a thumbs up. Like, did I hear it correctly or not?
Yeah, I just want to let everybody know.
But I thought it'd be fun to hear the behind the scenes. That sometimes not all the equipment works perfectly. And
I will say this for Drake, because I broke this microphone stand earlier this week, and then I forgot to tell Drake about it. Because I didn't want to text him.
That's a good move.
I didn't want to fix things around here.
Well, 6
with
o'clock.
Coronavirus, it's not too hard to figure out who was at the mic.
Right.
Process of elimination.
And yesterday, so like what Drake says oftentimes is when something's not working in here, you know, people will complain, well, this isn't even working, but then no one tells him. And he's like, well, I can't fix anything if nobody tells me that it's not working properly, because I don't know that it's not working. So I will make sure we let Drake know. And he did fix the microphone as soon as he found out that that I had broken it. So thank you to Curtis Seabolt for tattling on me on that one.
K-Dog! okay, so I wanted to get hit a couple of notes real quick. The tweet that we were talking about with Odell Beckham Jr. at the end of the last segment, he tweeted out, Jake, don't be surprised this weekend when they win. Just throw it out there. And then many people pointed out that Patrick Mahomes liked that tweet. So, okay. Thank you, Odell Beckham, for the added irritant to Patrick Mahomes to motivate him and get him to play pissed off. And so the other thing I wanted to play here is we were talking about Kareem Hunt, and we heard Kareem Hunt talking about playing the Chiefs as the clip at the beginning of the segment. Since we're on this theme, Stan, I want to stick with this and just get your thoughts about Kareem Hunt coming back. I want you to listen to Nick Chubb, because all this talk about Kareem Hunt, and Nick Chubb is a hell of a running back. That's what they have, a great 1-2 punch of running backs. This is Nick Chubb talking about Kareem Hunt being fired up to face his old team for a while now.
I mean, Kareem thought about this game all year like he knew it was going to happen. I mean, he's excited for it. I'm excited for him. I'm excited to watch him go out there and play. And, I mean, yeah, I mean, he's ready for it.
In a year, Kareem would become so close. How proud of him are you that he's been able to kind of straighten things up off the field and, you know, been able to stay eligible all season?
Yeah, I'm extremely proud. I mean, first since I met Kareem, he's been a great person, a great guy who's definitely like one of my best friends on the team. I mean, he's fun to be around, you know, also. And yeah, I mean, we're always, you know, cutting up, laughing together. Through the week on Sundays, we're running the ball together. So I mean, he's definitely a person that I enjoy being around.
How much did he talk about the Chiefs going to the Super Bowl last year, and how much that bothered him that he wasn't a part of it?
Well, I remember last year, beginning of the season, he talked about it a little bit. It's like he knew they were going to go and win it all. And I know he wanted to be a part of it. He's here now, so he's ours now.
Okay, here are the numbers we're dealing with here between Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. And again, if they don't run the ball effectively, if that's not a plus for them on Sunday, I don't see any path to victory for them. They have to be able to run the ball very effectively against the Chiefs to have a chance to win. So Nick Chubb, in 12 games, 1,067 yards and 12 touchdowns, averaging 5.6 yards per carry, also had 150 yards in the air. Kareem Hunt, he started five games, especially when Chubb was hurt, but he played in all 16 games, 841 yards on the ground with six touchdowns. He averaged 4.2 yards per carry. So big difference there, 5.6 for Chubb, 4.2 for Kareem Hunt. But then Kareem Hunt had 38 catches for 304 yards and five more touchdowns. So Chubb had 12 touchdowns, Hunt had 11. You combine those two numbers, and that's unbelievable production from the running back spot. Stan Weber, your thoughts about that matchup and Kareem Hunt with all this emotion. And Nick Chubb admits he's been talking about this for a while. He was talking about it last year. He's been talking about facing the Chiefs. Man, that's emotion's great, but sometimes things get away from you. I'm really interested to see how Kareem Hunt plays against the Chiefs on Sunday.
Absolutely. It's obviously a big story. I thought Steve Spagnuolo put it into great perspective about getting ready for this 1-2 punch. Steve Spagnuolo is as aggressive of defensive coordinator as there is in the National Football League now, I believe. And I think the Chiefs are very smart. They study things well. They have an awesome staff. Andy Reid running it, Steve Spagnuolo, and everyone else. They, I think, can work off of tendencies and make an odds chart of what play is going to be run just by who's in the game. So when they have two backs, they'll say one back's in the ball game and they're not going to use 20% of the playbook. So now Tyrann Mathieu and the guys can hedge a little bit and guess on plays. And when the ball snapped and they see a guard move, they go, yeah, I know what play this is. That recognition, that knowledge base is what pro football is all about. Not only are they great athletes, they read stuff so fast. With Chubb and Kareem Hunt, they're interchangeable. And it really puts the Chiefs back into a neutral spot of we don't have tendencies. We don't know what play they're going to run because they each run the playbook equally. I think that's the big story right here. Not only are they both good, but the Chiefs do not have the advantage of saying we know which back's in the ballgame situationally. Now, with Kareem Hunt, I think that it's fun when you're on the Kansas City Chiefs side to get fired up. It's easy when you're a Cleveland Brown fan to see why you want your guy to be fired up and make a big deal about this. But me, being around football players and the game all the time, I look at more of what he said about it being personal, being on a line of nothing negative about the Chiefs. He's the one who screwed up and didn't get a run in the Super Bowl. That's personal. Not mean to the Chiefs. It's personal to me because I screwed up and did not dance in the end zone with the Chiefs, and I don't have a Super Bowl ring on right now. Secondly, when you know the guys in the locker room, and it's the team that drafted you, he doesn't know seven teams. He hasn't been around. He knows two teams. He knows the Chiefs and Cleveland. The fact that he's going to go up against guys he knows, it's personal. It's just like when you play against your brother or your neighbor on the Thanksgiving football games or whatever. You know, you want to get after it and beat them because you know them so well. And you want to have bragging rights when you're eating turkey, you know, for the Thanksgiving meal. So I just think it's much less a Kareem Hunt being a bad guy talking trash on the Chiefs. I look at it as he's excited and he knows what's at stake. This is the best team in the NFL. He missed out before and he really wants to show himself. He wants to prove it. So yes, end of the day, though, it still gets back to the same point, right? He has a lot of pressure on himself. He's not going to play free and easy. He's going to be playing like, this is the day I got to play great against the Chiefs. And what will that bring out at him? I don't know. He could be untackleable when he runs the ball in from the seven and bounces off people, or he may slip and fall trying to do too much or miss a pass because he's trying to make a juke before he catches it. You never know how that bit of emotion is going to affect a player. But I think he's going to have it. But I don't think it's at all negative. I just think he really wants to prove. It's like I see players whose parents don't get to come to their games. You know, that they come from Florida and they play in this area and their parent gets to come to one game. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you just see that they really want to play well with their parents in the house. So I think it's more like that. Not negative at all from Kareem Hunt.
We've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB.
I think everybody here does a great job of just hitting the reset button. You know, we, like I've said, we have a big picture mindset, but a singular game focus. And so you have to have that, especially right now. Every game is going to be extremely emotionally and mentally taxing. I mean, obviously the physical part comes on Sundays, but each week you're having to put everything you have into it during the week, and then you empty that bucket on Sunday. And so you just have to hit the reset button. And right now, I think your guys are doing a great job of that.
We've got Stan Weber in studio. Stan, that was Cleveland quarterback Baker Mayfield, and you know plenty about Baker Mayfield, having seen him up close when he was at Oklahoma. So tell us everything you know and everything you think of Baker Mayfield as a quarterback and what you expect from him on Sunday at Arrowhead Stadium.
Well, Baker Mayfield, I think, is a voice that we all know because of his college experience. And rarely when I'm talking about an NFL player would I revert back to what they did in college. It's generally irrelevant. They're a pro now. They're a grown-up. Everything's different. But I do think it's important to point out. And plus, I need to, any listener who listens to us for the next hour or plus, I want to put in bold headlines, the Chiefs are the best team in football. They're very likely to win the Super Bowl. They are going to win this game against Cleveland. And then everything else, when I say things about the Browns, I want to say with the words, unless. Unless this, that, or the other. So when I'm talking, I want everyone to understand the Chiefs are awesome and Cleveland's chances of winning aren't great. But I can make a case how they can be competitive, even win the game. So you focus on Baker Mayfield. I think about Josh Allen real quick. I think when you talk about Baker Mayfield, you got to bring Josh Allen into the equation to have a compare and contrast, because everyone loves Josh Allen. And when we go down to best quarterbacks in the NFL, we know who the top two are, but a lot of people are now sliding Josh Allen in where it used to always be Russell Wilson. It was always Russell Wilson earlier in the year when we talked about it. We had 1, 2, 3, and then we talked about it. We say Josh Allen now. Well, I don't trust Josh Allen. Okay, I don't trust him yet. The look of the deer in the headlights he had when things weren't going well in the fourth quarter against the Colts was not, oh, here's the guy's confident. It was the same quarterback the year before, to me. He scares me if I'm a Buffalo Bills fan. Baker Mayfield does not scare me as a Cleveland Brown fan because he played at Oklahoma. This is not too big for him. He's played in big games. He's had the arrows pointing right at him throughout his whole career. Is he a great quarterback? Is he even in the same league talent-wise with Josh Allen and where they may end up 5 or 10 years from now? No! No, Baker's not. He's a try-hard guy. He's a guy who didn't start his sophomore or junior year in high school and was really mad about it. The other guy got a start. He got hurt. That's why Baker Mayfield went in. He walked on to Texas Tech. Then he couldn't do it, so he moved to Oklahoma. He walked on at Oklahoma. And so this guy is an underdog, but he played at Oklahoma. He's used to the pressure. It's not too big for him to come out and play at his best level, and he's not scared of losing. And that's a big factor. Now, Arrowhead's not going to be rocking. It would be a lot harder if Arrowhead were rocking. You guys played a highlight earlier today about Patrick Mahomes running into the end zone against the Titans. And I go, what is that noise? What's that noise in the background? What is that? I can hear Kevin Harlan, but I can hear something else. It's the roar of Arrowhead.
Yeah.
You bring the roar in, and it would make a big difference. But I just don't think, you know, what I think Baker Mayfield's going to do is he could turn the ball over, but I would not be surprised if he played his very best game because I think he is a bull in a china closet. And when you're the underdog and when you have no right to be compared to the Chiefs, that's the kind of guy you need leading your way. So when they went out in the field, he is never going to think about, oh, I might make a mistake and lose. He's thinking about blowing up the world, and he thinks the Cleveland Browns are good. He knows no better. He's been under pressure. And I think that makes everyone else on the team think, why aren't we as good as the Chiefs? I think it makes them dangerous. Baker Mayfield is the perfect guy to try to pull off the upset.
We have Stan Weber in studio. We'll talk more to Stan about the Chiefs' opponent, the Cleveland Browns, after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Red Friday, a postseason Red Friday, January 15, 2021. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan with Jake Gutierrez, joined by our special guest, who talks football with us every Friday, Stan Weber. And Stan, before we move on from Baker Mayfield, I had one other question about him based on what you saw in college, what you saw from him in Oklahoma. And I'm glad that you brought up Josh Allen in comparison, because they'll always be compared, because John Dorsey and the Cleveland Browns had the number one overall pick in 2018, and they could have selected Josh Allen. They could have selected Lamar Jackson. They also could have selected Josh Rosen and Sam Darnold, but they picked Baker Mayfield. And I mean, I guess the way you look at it is, does he have the gigantic upside of Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen? No, but he certainly doesn't have the downside of Sam Darnold and especially Josh Rosen. And so they took Baker Mayfield over Josh Allen. But based on what you thought of him going into the NFL, is this what you expected, or is he better or worse than you anticipated watching him at Oklahoma?
He's better than I thought he would be as a pro. I didn't think he should be the number one overall pick. But I guess I didn't finish my thought. I mentioned Josh Allen because he went to Wyoming. Okay, I want to make sure I point that out. He went to Wyoming. He's a great athlete, and here he is. You know, even Carson Wentz went to North Dakota State, and you say, well, that's not big time. But they had championship pressure all the time. Josh Allen never did. So it's not the theme of my NFL evaluation of quarterbacks. Like I said before, it's usually irrelevant. But in this case, as we're building to who's the best in the AFC, who's going to keep the Chiefs from going all the way to the Super Bowl, and I start evaluating these things, what pops into my head is, I don't trust Josh Allen, and he hasn't been under this pressure. He's been under Buffalo Bill pressure. Last year, they failed miserably. Last week, he was under pressure with the Colts, and they just were neutral. Neutral at best, in my mind. It was the Colts didn't win the game, not Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills won the game. And then I said, you know what? This is new to him. You know, he's a feature guy, but he went to Wyoming. And then I think about Baker Mayfield, and I go, it is not new to him. He went to Oklahoma, where everyone's going after you, where when Kansas talks trash to you, you grab your crotch. You know, what? That's the kind of thing you would only do if you're the Oklahoma quarterback, right?
Like, I never, ever, ever thought I'd hear Stan Weber on this show talk about anyone grabbing their crotch, but I am here for it.
I was at that game.
It's a fact. It's football. I watch too much football. If it were in a movie, I'd be going, I don't know what you're talking about, you know, or a concert, but...
They also grabbed his crotch during that game.
Well, you know what? It's funny when that happened. We actually, with my friends, the Eplers, that I talk about a lot on this show, they are big Oklahoma. Jason went to Oklahoma. And so we went with their family, and we actually went to watch Baker Mayfield run out of the tunnel. Well, our seats were on that side of the stadium. And I told my son, he's 11 now, so whatever he would have been at the time, like 6-7 years old, I think. And I said, hey, you're going to watch a Heisman Trophy winner here, and this guy's going to play in the NFL. Little did I know that Kyler Murray, by the way, was going to play later in that game, and I didn't know who Kyler Murray was at that time. And when Baker Mayfield left the game because it was a blowout, my buddy said, hey, this guy's supposed to be really good too. But anyways, we didn't see it because we were like, we were watching him run out, so we missed the whole part where the KU players refused to shake hands with Mayfield. And so I get the stands, and there's this big uproar. I look on Twitter, and everybody's all fired up about something, and I'm like, they didn't shake his hand? Who thought that was a good idea? Hey, this team and this guy is way more talented than all of our players. Let's get him fired up before the game.
They come into Lawrence and they're asleep.
Yeah,
this
right.
is perfect. This right. is how you upset Texas yes. or Oklahoma or Oklahoma State.
That's one of
they're asleep. Yes. And now you wake him up. And
I was just like,
most of the players are looking out at the coin toss. They want to know, are we kicking off or are we
That's
receiving?
That's got to be a top 25 moment in the Big 12 in the last 10 years, at least for me.
I mean, it just.
I mean, there
like...
was so much there to it. And to hear Nate discuss it, it was so funny because, like you were saying, like, why would. Why?
Yeah, why are you stoking the fire?
Like,
and the guys are out there.
The
Kansas players are out there. You're like, they aren't the ones that I would expect to do it. That's what is even a bigger surprise. I thought they'd be the ones shaking hands to go, you know, hey, it's an honor to play against you and I'm going to come after you. No. Anyway, Baker. Baker isn't going to take, you know, he's got an attitude, man.
Yeah.
And when you're the underdog or when you're a franchise in shambles, he is not focused on anything else than he's going to go win. And I really believe that. And right now the pressure is on. How do you handle that pressure? I'm not saying that the Cleveland Browns are going to win the Super Bowl and that he has the quarterback capability of taking him there, period. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about this round, this game, what he did against the Steelers 2 weeks in a row. The Steelers are hard to beat. Even the JV aren't easy to beat with all that pressure of Cleveland, everyone wondering how it's going to break down. everyone in town and in that region thinks the Browns are going to fail, especially when the Steelers show up. It's, oh, no, we're not going to beat them, except for Baker. He doesn't know any better. He's like, I've won my whole life. In high school, I was on big-time programs. When I was OU, we were great. I'm great. I'm the number one pick. I'm doing commercials. You know, why am I not great? And it's just great. It's awesome for them to have a guy who's not going to be nervous about putting it all out on the line. He's going to think about win. If they get behind by 10, he's not going to lay over and go, oh, crap, we're not as good. He'll be the only dummy in the stadium who goes, I think we can come back and win this thing. That, you know, he might have been the right guy for the Browns.
Yeah.
To build it to this point. Now, he may level them off, you know, and be kind of playoff-ish, which would be fine. If the Browns made the playoffs 3 out of the next 6 years, 2 out of the next 4 years, and then they brought someone else on, maybe takes them to the next level. Baker may not ever win a Super Bowl, but I think he's been the perfect guy to take the Browns from no wins kind of expectations to the playoffs. And he keeps breaking through the barriers. When they go 8-8, when they move to 10 wins, he keeps saying, why aren't we this good? And the locker room's going, that guy's crazy. We're the Browns. You know? But now they're starting to believe. And I thought they got a lot of belief last week. I thought a lot of real belief came on that they believe in Baker. They believe in themselves. And they became more dangerous with what they did last week. And it has nothing to do with the first quarter, because that's all about Pittsburgh giving them the game and Pittsburgh being awful and Pittsburgh being the same team they were before. They did not morph themselves out of their regular season form into a playoff form, which is very relevant to our Chiefs question. How good are the Chiefs going to be? Are they going to be the same team they've been the last 8 games or all 16 games? Or are they going to be a new version? We keep thinking. I think most of us believe it's playoff time. Chiefs are going to ramp it up. I thought that about the Steelers. Steelers did not ramp it up. They were the same exact team they were in a regular season. They gave the game to the Browns, which means nothing for Browns' confidence. But when the Steelers got within 12 and Cleveland went out and kicked their ass in the fourth quarter and said, we've been better than you all year. We beat you last week when we needed to, and we beat you all day today, and we're going to do it again and prove it. That is when they morphed into, we are a legitimate playoff team.
So I'm thinking of that famous inspirational poster picture of the little kitten that's looking in the mirror, and in the mirror is the reflection of a big lion. And it said, you know, what matters is how you see yourself. And it's like Baker Mayfield, doesn't matter how many people have told him he can't do something or he's not good enough to do something. He has a relentless belief in himself that he doesn't listen to him. And I think that, first of all, a heck of a lot of respect for anybody that does that, you know, in their life. And that's why he's accomplished all these things that other people told him he couldn't accomplish. I'm wondering, overall, I think my point is, I think it's a massive positive for Baker Mayfield and why he's been able to do what he's been able to do. The downside, if there is one to that, sometimes can be in a game when he thinks he can do something in a certain specific play that he shouldn't try to do. You know, that rolling out across his body, throwing it back.
Roll out to the left and throw sidearm because Mahomes is in the house.
Yeah.
And it turns into an easy interception.
And I'm wondering, do the Chiefs need to put him in those positions? In other words, do they need to get him down by a couple scores where he thinks he needs to go make some plays? Because it seems like maybe one of the big strengths he's had this year has been he hasn't done that as much. He hasn't tried to put the team on his back and put the team in bad spots. Do the Chiefs need to put him in positions in this game to force him to try to do some things where he might make some mistakes?
Yeah, you know, he threw only 8 interceptions, so we can't say, oh, he makes a lot of mistakes and he's wild and crazy. That's kind of a little bit of his original pro debut. But I think he's into the system now, believes in it. He can throw from the pocket. Okay, we've seen him throw from the pocket as well. I just think, you know, Stephen asked what I thought about him going into the draft, and I thought he was a feisty guy who, you know, I guess would play the role perfectly that we talked about. Bring Cleveland from nowhere to a playoff team. Congratulations. See you later. We're not talking with you with Aaron Rodgers and Patrick Mahomes. And, you know, there's a lot of Alex Smiths in the world. Everyone around here wants to, you know, discredit that. It's hard to do. But, you know, there's guys who can get to the playoffs. It's getting to the next 2 games and getting to the Super Bowl. And I don't know if Baker's good enough to do that. Just flat out, talent-wise, you know, his height, it's not easy to see over the line. He's got to have a lot of other things go well. The rest of the team around him has to play well. But Baker's smart enough to know that. I've always thought as a quarterback, and this is old school, Stephen, not so much modern when you throw every down. It used to be when you ran the ball more than you threw and you had to make key plays on third down, including maybe audibilizing to a running play and have your line come off the ball with a little more energy. I've always thought a quarterback is a jockey, that the horse is the talent and you got to make the other 10 guys play better. So when you're a good quarterback, it's because you can make the other 10 guys play better than they normally do compared to another guy, maybe the other team's quarterback. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I think Baker plays that role very well, okay? I think he makes the Cleveland Browns better as a team and on offense. He's the poster boy for being able to do that as an underdog fighting through. But his just flat-out talent is not there. So, yeah, if he's behind the Chiefs, the odds are, can he put them on the shoulders and win? No. Will he try to put them on the shoulders and make mistakes? I'm not sure. But it's just that it doesn't really matter because the first point, if you believe the first point, doesn't matter the second. It's not like he's gone crazy and he makes mistakes. It's just he's not quite good enough. He's not in the same league, you know, of the guys like Patrick Mahomes. So he's a momentum guy. When the momentum's going, he's going to fire those guys up in the huddle to get better and better and to overachieve because he's trying to teach them as pros, why can't you overachieve? Myles Garrett, I interviewed Myles Garrett when he was at Texas A&M, and everyone's telling him he's great. And I go, boy, this guy's lazy, and he thinks he's great, and he doesn't have that edge. And guess what? K-State's freshman offensive lineman from Lawrence just kicked his butt all day long when K-State beat Texas A&M in the Houston Bowl. Game. Okay, but just think about what difference did Baker Mayfield make in his play? Did Myles Garrett – everyone just says he's great because he was drafted, right? But I think he's playing better. Maybe it's because Baker Mayfield's taught him a little bit of an underdog mentality to go fight like crazy and to utilize all of your skill. Because now we don't have questions about Myles Garrett. He's a dominant NFL guy. But was he always a dominant guy? So I think Baker has those influences. But Steven, I didn't think he should be the first pick. I mean, I was surprised as heck when he went number one. I thought, okay, give me a 18th pick in the draft. Pick him at 25. He'll do some things, but it really is hard for me to think of him as a number one pick. And so he's overachieving. He's doing better in the pros than I thought he would.
And I'm glad you brought up Myles Garrett because that's what I was going to ask you about. Because, and to your point, Nate ranted and raved about that performance against Kansas State and talked about how K-State and Myles Garrett did nothing. And remember, Nate, to the point where that it made you question whether or not he should be the number one overall pick. He was dominated to that level.
Who was the defensive, the pass rusher for K-State that year that was a pro prospect? I can't remember now, but he outperformed Myles Garrett in that game.
Oh, yeah, he's a pro right now. He played for the Bengals. I forgot his name.
I'm going to go back and look at that draft. But
he's a defensive. He's still in the pros right now.
Yeah, and I said, look, everybody's going off the size and skill, the measurables.
Elijah Lee?
Willis.
There you
Jordan
go.
Willis?
Yeah.
Willis is still a pro, and he was an overachiever.
Yeah.
He did everything right.
Yeah.
Myles Garrett was just kind of, hey, I'm going to look at my talent.
Yeah.
And he got blocked all day. And then Jordan Willis is, you know, played like a Snyder player.
Yeah.
Just did everything right, and he's still a pro.
But
he had four tackles and a sack, and Elijah Lee had 12 tackles and a sack in that game.
Yeah.
Against 33-28, K-State over A&M, Texas Bowl. Wednesday, December 28, 2016, with Stan Weber on the call.
But you're right, Stephen. I did. I came on the next day, and I was like, boy, all this talk about Myles Garrett, to me, he looks like one of those guys that, well, Grunty used to always say the guy that looks like Tarzan but plays like Jane. I don't know if you can still say that these days or what. I guess I just did. But that's what Grunty used to say about guys. And he looked so great in his uniform and had all the measurables, but the production wasn't there his senior year. I know he had an ankle injury maybe that he was dealing with. But I highly questioned the motor of Garrett. And he has, for whoever's credit it is, he has become that player that's a tick in the box for the scouts out there that look for what this guy's ceiling is, you know, because he has become that player, I guess, in his pro career.
But it also
now.
Is what you get put around. You know, again, what Patrick Mahomes is awesome.
Yeah.
And what he was put into, you know, like you're a great. If you're going to be a great giant tree, if you're planted in the right spot, how much better is it?
Right.
The soil around you is great. And,
right.
and Myles Garrett, I think the awful event that he had with the Steelers might have helped humble him.
Mm-hmm.
Being around Mayfield, I don't know, but he seems to me to be a changed guy in how he plays.
Yeah, I agree.
Right. And so but the one thing we could also agree on, regardless of what we thought of him going into the draft, now he's established he can get to the quarterback. In 49 career starts, he has 42.5 sacks. He has 12 sacks this year. That's three straight years with double-digit sacks. And Stan, I think anyone you talk to, I think most Chiefs fans or all Chiefs fans think they're going to win the game, but everyone's concerned about the offensive line. We know Mitchell Schwartz is not coming back for this game. Andy Reid said that. And so when you look at the Browns and their defensive front, he by far is the biggest problem. I mean, Sheldon Richardson's talented. Adrian Claiborne's talented. But Myles Garrett, if he is on, can wreak havoc in the backfield. And so you tell me what you think of that matchup, because clearly that's going to be the number one guy that the Chiefs have to account for when protecting Patrick Mahomes.
Well, I think that they're going to have to strategize around him. So we're not going to be able to look at his stats necessarily and have any conclusion. You really have to watch the video of the game. Do the Chiefs, you know, throw some down-the-line passes and say, let's get the ball in Tyreek Hill's hands 1 yard behind the line of scrimmage and run that play rather than dropping back in the pocket after a shotgun snap and throwing the ball? They may do that. The Chiefs will, you know, that's where Andy Reid's so awesome. He won't let it be easy for us to understand what's happening in the game. If Myles Garrett, if they're worried about him on 3rd and 7 blowing the play up, they may choose a completely different play. They may go screen pass, and then you go, you see the Chiefs get yanked down after a 3 yard gain, and everyone's screaming at their TV or in the stadium, why did you throw? Why did you not let Patrick Mahomes throw the ball down the field, past the first down marker, to Travis or somebody? What are we doing messing with our running backs behind? And it might be because we're not going to hold up against Myles Garrett. So, you know, it's very intricate and really hard for me sometimes without knowing why the Chiefs are making the decision they're making, what he can cause in the ballgame. But I do expect him to be a factor, yes. I think he's going to be hard to block, and he could, you know, if you force the Chiefs to punt, you have created such a big play. So if there's any third down where Patrick's not quite able to wait that split second longer and misses a guy barely, you know the Chiefs, you see it after a third down miss, they look at each other like, oh, darn it. Darn it, Patrick, you threw it 1 foot to my right, and I didn't know you were going, you know, I wasn't quite out on my break, and I thought you were going to throw it to my left. And they look at each other going, we know we're open. We know we can do this. We don't care about the defense. But they made you make the decision on the run without looking at each other with that extra split second. It's incomplete. Myles Garrett gets no sack. You know, did he even get a pressure? But the question, you know, that's great. So I do think that he could be a factor in the ball game. I think the Chiefs are going to have to strategize against him. And it's a place where if you're a Cleveland Brown fan, you say, I'll be very surprised if we don't have an advantage, that he doesn't affect the game, even if he doesn't get a sack.
Stan Weber is our guest. Stan, emotion is a big part of this as well. We talked about what an effort it took for them to beat the Steelers, because even after they were up 28-0, the Steelers came back, and I thought, I mean, I was thinking maybe they had a chance until Tomlin punted, and after that I figured the Browns would just win, and they did. But to overcome a team that had dominated them, they had lost 17 in a row at Pittsburgh. They were 2-23-1 against Ben Roethlisberger, and not only did they end that streak on the road and beat Roethlisberger, but they did it in the playoffs. And so for a team that did that, does it make them into a team that now they believe they can do everything, and confidence is a big factor here? We've seen teams get on a roll and start to believe, and momentum becomes a huge thing. Or do you think it's going to be difficult for them to be able to, even though this is the playoffs, to be able to physically and mentally get back from that in time to give the type of effort that it would take to beat the defending world champs?
The physical and mental side, I'll go with the last part of your question, is a real question to analyze, and I think physically they may not be able to answer the bell. That's where their offensive line got beat up, and they may even walk out in the field and start, but that does not mean they're 100%, and you've got to be at your best to play the Chiefs. Their cornerbacks, you know, they didn't play. Now they are supposedly going to be off the COVID list and back, but are they going to be able to play their sharpest level of play? We said last week one of the great things about the Chiefs having a bye, even in expanded playoffs, is not only did they advance where it's always dangerous to play, okay? It's always dangerous to play in the playoffs in a single elimination, but also we hope that they get after each other and beat the hell out of each other. Well, we were talking maybe about the Titans and the Ravens, but it happened. The Cleveland and the Steelers were, you know, it's a massive division rivalry, and even though the Steelers did not function well, they were getting mad and wanting to fight, and the physicality was out there, it really wore on the Browns. So if I'm a Browns fan thinking, boy, I really like where we are, I'm worried, are we just not quite on our game because of the physicality? Now the mental side. It also could be very easily a celebration in Cleveland. They've done something. They made the playoffs. I mean, come on. This is a great season. And then they beat the Steelers, and you talked about the history. This is just not winning a game. You know, this is like, you know, Kansas beating Oklahoma in football. You would be so satisfied that we beat them in a big game, and now are you going to bounce back and be ready for the next game? I thought that that is a willing question to ask. I do not have any problem with that. The Browns will be ready. They gain confidence. Their head coach wasn't even a participant last week, so he comes back in this week and says, let's go. I want to be a part of a win. And Baker's the guy. I'm telling you, Baker is not celebrating right now looking to do three more commercials because they beat the Steelers. He's not. He is single-minded enough that he wants to win the next game, and he has confidence. And they play with a physicality. And Marty Schottenheimer, you might get mad at him for not winning Super Bowls, but when you try to fight your way through regular seasons into early playoff rounds, etc., physicality is something to lean on. It works. When you have confidence that you're going to play a physical game and you're relying on your running backs and your offensive line, then and you got a quarterback who believes, I think Cleveland comes in with real confidence. And they become dangerous because they really are here to win. They're not celebrating the Pittsburgh game at all. And I thought they might, but I do not think they are with Baker. And so I think Cleveland's much more dangerous mentally. But will they be physically able to match up to a rested Chiefs team? I think that's something to really consider. It may be that Cleveland's not.
And you're right, their offensive line is banged up, and that's one of the biggest strengths of their football team. We've got Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB.
First of all, it was an honor and a privilege, but that's not what we're here for, all right? We're here to talk about the Cleveland Browns, and you've heard us talk about this before. We eliminate all distractions, okay? At the end of the day, my focus and attention is on the Cleveland Browns. This is a great team. And they're playing some great ball. They got some young guys up front that are playing tremendous. They got some guys on the second level with those backers. And they got a heck of a secondary group, one of those guys we're very familiar with. So we're looking forward to this challenge. I know our guys are fired up and excited. They're refreshed. They've hit the reset button. Now it's time to get out there and produce and show exactly what we're about.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. That was Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy. And let me tell you right now, it is snowing sideways out here in the Northland. The wind is gusting, and the snow is coming down already a good coat on the ground. But if that's what you're waking up to, and you haven't gone outside yet, dress accordingly and get ready for some slower traffic. Is it snowing out there, guys?
It doesn't look like any snow's coming down right now, but it was when I drove in this morning.
Man, we're getting it good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You can tell Nate has been in here a long time. Yes, it's snowing.
Oh, is it?
Sure, it's snowing.
I mean, I see snow on the ground.
I mean, you've been here for hours. I know. I mean, you see the white stuff on the ground right there? There's more than there was a little bit ago.
Okay, all right.
I know you're very focused, and you've been here a long time.
Laser-like focus. Stan, you heard Eric Bieniemy talking about not being distracted and being focused on the Cleveland Browns after conducting or being a part of a few Zoom interviews last week with some other teams. But we had some movement last night as far as NFL coaching vacancies. Before we get back to the Chiefs, just want to get your quick thoughts on these, as there's now plenty of people out there reporting and there's buzz that maybe Eric Bieniemy doesn't get a job this time around either. But the New York Jets are hiring the excellent defensive coordinator from the 49ers, Robert Saleh, who I think is that's a really good hire for the Jets. I know the Lions wanted him bad, and I'm a fan. I like him a lot. Urban Meyer is officially going to be the next head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, so those two vacancies are filled. And there's a report at ESPN.com that the Falcons have offered their head coaching position to Titans offensive coordinator Arthur Smith. And so it looks like it's going to be three if he decides to go to Atlanta. Your reaction to those hires in relation to Eric Bieniemy not being hired yet and buzz out there that maybe he's not going to get one of these jobs?
I think Saleh on the defensive side is what Eric Bieniemy is to the offensive side in most people's minds, an assistant coach that is queued up and ready to go and be a head coach. And so it's not surprising that he gets the job. I think that Urban Meyer versus these new first-time head coaches really is the compare and contrast that's worth noting. Being a head coach is completely different than being a head assistant. It's great if you're an expert in one side of the field. There's no doubt about that Andy Reid's expertise as an offensive guy, if he's not a head coach, he'd be killing it right now as an offensive coordinator. But that does not mean that he'd be a great head coach. It would help with some of his offensive strategy. Maybe he can call his own plays. I like when guys can be their own offensive or defensive coordinator because I think building a football program is all about the head coach mostly and who's your offensive and defensive coordinator. And if you're sure that you're one of them and you're good at it, they'll never leave. You know, when you have three people, one might take a promotion and another, and now you're the head coach with two new assistants. So when you're the offensive guy like Andy Reid is, he'll never lose that he's got a great offensive coordinator in addition to a head coach. I think Urban Meyer on the other side is obviously very well equipped to be a head coach and do all the things that it takes to maneuver as a head coach. So he checks one box where they don't check at all. We don't know. They may be great head coaches or they may be average. But we don't know if Urban Meyer is going to be a good NFL coach. Is he got the experience, the mindset? Is he going to hire the right assistants? He can hire the right assistants in college, but that includes recruiting and alumni relationships and all that. So it's very interesting, Urban Meyer. I have no idea if he's going to be good or not, or if he's going to be able to withstand the pressure over the next couple of years. The answer normally is no. Very few college coaches have been able to come in and jump in and do a great job. You'll say, hey, Pete Carroll, okay, great example. You'll say, Jimmy Johnson, okay, great example. Other than that, it's Jim Harbaugh did a great job with the Niners. But other than that, almost every coach does not do a good job going from college and becoming a pro head coach. So I really thought Urban Meyer was elite. Urban Meyer was undefeated at Utah when Alex Smith was a senior. So, yeah, I believe in Urban Meyer completely as a college coach. If he came back in college, if we were announcing he's the head coach of X, whoever it was, I'd say they're going to be fighting for a national championship within 2 or 3 years. That's how good Urban Meyer is. But I don't necessarily think that he's a dominant coach in the NFL. I have a lot of questions. So I don't know who you're better off with, the guys who are really lined up and ready and know the NFL and been coaching and coordinating it and are inexperienced, or a veteran head coach. I believe what Gary Barnett says. It's a theorem that I use. You do not know what you need to know as a head coach until your third year. You don't even know what questions have just flown by your head that you missed until your third year as a head coach, and you go, oh, I didn't realize that was important. So Gary Barnett's the one that said it to me, and I do think being a head coach is completely different, and that's why I don't sit here ever, I don't think, and say any assistant is going to be a great head coach. I can't do that. I've got to see him as a head coach. From Eric Bieniemy to anybody else, they can be great at what they do. It does not mean they're going to be great as a head coach. It is a whole different responsibility.
So obviously Urban Meyer has all that experience as a head coach, but as you mentioned, it's a different ballgame when you do it in the NFL. So
he's always had the best players at Ohio State or Florida.
Right.
You know, I mean, even right. Utah against the competition. He can go out and get the best players and recruit them. Here he's going to have to out-coach the elite of the world, and all he has is the draft advantages, which they do. Mm-hmm. They got the number one pick. Mm-hmm. They got a ton of draft picks in the first and second round even, and they have a lot of cap room. So Jacksonville is fine. But is he really going to – Andy Reid would tell him, don't be your own general manager and head coach. Right? Wouldn't Andy Reid – I don't want to speak for Andy Reid. I think that's Andy Reid's conclusion. He did a lot to Philadelphia, yeah. But he doesn't want to do it as much here at the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah.
He wants to have a lot of input, but he doesn't want to worry about the waiver wire and – you know, a lot of these things.
Yeah.
And it sounds like Urban Meyer is going to be doing that. Is he going to find his Brett Veach? I mean, I don't know if he's going to be successful. There's a lot of questions about setting things up the right way. He may give 100% of the opinion of how they're going to set it up at Jacksonville. Sounds like he wouldn't have come if he didn't have all that option.
So,
but he may not make the right choice.
You guys might laugh as soon as I may quote this person. But he's the only person I've talked to who's done both in terms of coaching in the NFL and coaching in college. And It was Charlie Weiss.
Oh, Steven, he's funny, isn't he? Oh, that guy's funny. Oh, Nate.
So,
what, really, what are you going to do?
What are you going to do, Nate?
So, you know,
I can't wait to hear this.
Right. It was interesting. Working with Charlie Weiss at KU was interesting, and I had a lot of time.
Super Bowl champion Charlie Weiss. So, hey, guy was the one of the best offensive coordinators in this time.
I don't know how Tom Brady's been able to do it without him.
Right. I mean, it's amazing.
I don't think Charlie does either.
a relentless recruiter.
Oh, just,
yes.
Well, so... Anyways. So, I remember at one point we were... I had a lot of one-on-one time with Charlie where we just talked, and I remember asking him the differences.
To be a fly in the wall, that.
There was a lot of things going through my mind when I had this conversation with him, but I asked him, you know, hey, you know, what's the work balance like from college to pro? And he said, oh, so much more work in the pros. So much more work in the pros, and the reason why is because you pretty much can work with these guys as much as you want. I mean, there's some limitations on time spent, but it's mostly the guys can be they can be in the facility all day. So you're with the players all day. Then you got to go do all the film work and, you know, game plan stuff and all that after they've left the building way later in the day. Whereas with the college players, you only get so much time with them, and then you have all this other time left over for doing all the administrative stuff and doing all the film study stuff. And what I was thinking in my head was, yeah, but maybe that's why, like, you know, Bill Snyder's, he's still using all that extra time to do more work. He's not just going, oh, I can go home now. I don't know.
He wasn't getting paid millions by Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Collecting two checks with 7-0s.
So
on, you know.
I do take it with that.
I really don't even have to go on these recruiting trips. I just kind of hang out.
I'm getting two checks this week.
Hey. Wow. I just send Grunhardt. Make him go recruit everybody.
What are you going
to
do?
I need to teach my son how to coach so I can get him a job.
Trust me, that was a big issue at KU. But so I take it with a heavy, heavy grain of salt. But one thing that he did say that made a little bit of sense to me was the fact that you got the guys, you know, the players, they're in the facility all day. This is their job. This isn't like in college where they're supposed to go to class. You know, there's all these heavy limits on practice hours and all that. So I just wonder, how different is it going to be for Urban Meyer, just the coaching aspect of it, you know? I don't know. I'm curious what your thoughts are on all
that.
Well,
the biggest difference is, first of all, Urban Meyer is going to lose more games. You know, he quit twice because of health reasons.
Right.
He told his family, right, you know, my doctor's saying, you know, the stress those guys feel is off the charts. Mm-hmm. Most of them are wired that way. Mm-hmm. That's what makes Andy Reid unbelievable, is that he seems to be wired in a different manner and be elite.
Yeah.
It's so hard to find a guy who expects perfection and is not wired scarily, on edge, if you're the family member, right? Mm-hmm. Urban Meyer is the exact guy you'd produce to say, this guy's going to win, and he might blow, you know, if it's a cartoon, his head might blow off. You know, this guy's on edge, and the health is a big issue. So how is he going to be able to handle the stress of the NFL? How is he going to handle even the losses? He claims, I get it, I'm going to be more relaxed and understand if you lose two games early in the year, you're going to be fine. We'll see. The other thing is, the players are grown men, and they want to make money, and they want to listen. Anybody who will tell them how to be better, they'll listen to. That's the good, pure part of being an NFL coach. There's no crap. Doesn't matter where you came from or anything else. You help a player get better and get another contract, win games, those kind of things. They want to listen. They want to get better. That's the good thing. But the other thing is, they'll call you out.
Yeah.
They'll call you out if they don't like what you're saying. They're done. It's like, no, I'm getting paid. Don't tell me what to do. Where he had a power over the college players.
Yeah.
Okay, he was a power figure as a coach at Ohio State or Florida, and he could grow those boys as 18-year-olds into men the way he wanted to. Okay, you're not with your mama and your daddy anymore. That's not the way he's got to coach in the NFL. So there's a lot of questions. How's he going to do this? There's no prediction in my mind of him being a better selection than anybody else. If you said, you know, pick any name you want and say they're the new coach at Jacksonville. And I would not say, oh, that doesn't compare to old Urban Meyer, because Urban Meyer is a great, dominant college head coach. But I don't know if he's going to be all of that in the NFL. I do think the coaching in the NFL, the head coaches in the NFL on average the last few years have been as weak as a group as any time in NFL that I've studied. You know, it used to be you'd have so many dominant coaches, and we really don't have many dominant coaches. We got Belichick and we got Andy Reid. You might put, what, Mike Tomlin,
Pete Carroll.
You know, you got to start searching. And then that next wave, where are they? You know, where's the 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th best coach? It used to be you'd say guys like, well, Bud Grant's the 7th best coach in the NFL. It was all different. So right now, I think it's easier to take yourself up into the upper level of coaching than it's been in the past.
I like Sean McDermott.
And Stefanski. I think there are some young guys that are starting to show themselves a little bit that maybe, and this is an interesting year for that, isn't it? Like to see if some of those young coaches like Stefanski and McDermott.
I can't wait for them to get confirmation. You know,
yeah.
Like McDermott, that's a great point, Stephen. It's a really good opinion you brought, because I don't know. I mean, they had that one year where everything went right. Then they looked really below average last year, and now they're kind of back. But, you know, we got to wait 2 or 3 more years. He may be absolutely the real deal, or he may just be a good offensive mind. You know, he's never lost a halftime lead. You know, that's interesting. I mean, that's coaching. He's never lost a halftime lead as a Rams head coach. So I'm not arguing with you at all, Stephen. I just want to see a little bit more confirmation.
You're talking about McVay. You were talking about McDermott at the Bills.
Oh, I'm sorry. Obviously, yeah. I said totally. Thank you for correcting me. I can see where you like McDermott and
Andy Reid disciple.
Yeah.
And also John Harbaugh. Yeah.
You should have mentioned John Harbaugh in there. Yeah. I apologize. Right. I got McVay in my mind because I was thinking about the Rams in the playoffs.
But he was the it guy.
I mean,
yeah, he was that it factor that's affected. You know, the guys they're signing in the NFL now. They want an offensive line like McVay. But McDermott's doing a very solid job, but he's still got some things to prove to go to the John Harbaugh level.
Yep.
And look, they're all Andy Reid guys, in a way, because Stefanski was an intern for a year under Andy Reid. And then, of course, Harbaugh and McDermott were assistants for Andy Reid. So the AFC playoffs, courtesy of Andy Reid and his coaching tree. So let's get to your picks before Gary Lezak takes over, because I'm quite sure right now he is losing his mind with all the snow running around outside ready to be on the show. He is tweeting. He's made several tweets. He is prepared. So let's go Sunday, 3:35, right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Rams at Packers.
Packers. Rams just won't be able to score enough.
Oh, boy. 7:15, prime time. Saturday night, Ravens at Bills, Stan.
I believe in the Ravens in this playoff position more than I do the Bills. Obviously, Lamar Jackson cannot play a below-average game. Lamar plays average. Ravens win barely. Lamar plays great like he did. That means few stupid plays, and then elite plays. Ravens win. I'm just leaning Ravens.
Okay, we'll save the best for last, and so we'll go to the final game of the weekend. The battle between Super Bowl winning Hall of Fame quarterbacks, Tampa Bay at New Orleans. Will the Saints make it 3-0 this year against Tampa?
The first game of the year, they dominated Tampa Bay, but Tampa was not even a team yet. They didn't know between Bruce Arians and a quarterback, Tom Brady. They weren't on the same page. Gronk was not there. Antonio Brown was not playing. That game I write off, who cares? Until they went and whipped Tampa Bay in midseason.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going, you know, when people talk about that good New Orleans defense and the pressure they put on, and is it something about the matchup? This is what scares me. So I'm saying this to everyone. I understand that the matchup may just be in favor of the Saints, and they may win the game. But I believe Tampa's the better team. If they played 6 opponents, okay, not each other, give me 6 good teams, I think the Tampa Bay Buccaneers would end up with more wins than the Saints. So I'm going to lean that way, going with my instincts. I think Tom Brady's hitting on all cylinders right now. I think that Tampa Bay Buccaneers are a legitimate team to play in the Super Bowl. I wonder if the Saints are. I say Tampa Bay.
Okay, finally, give us your score what happens between the Chiefs and the Browns?
Kansas City Chiefs, the question is all on the Chiefs' side of the field, first of all. They're the best team in the National Football League. But the Pittsburgh Steelers last week said, I believed, and they believed, they were going to turn it on and play at a different level in the playoffs. They didn't. They played exactly like they did throughout the regular season. They are what they are. If the Chiefs can turn it on to another level, and I can buy into that because I think the Chiefs, as champions, listened to Andy Reid and did a great job all regular season trying, but they really were waiting for the playoffs. If they have that other gear and they latch on to it, and as Eric Bieniemy said, we're rested and we're ready, we're recharged, it's Chiefs easy. It's Chiefs easy. They get first chance. They go out and win the game. They're better, and Cleveland can do nothing about it. But if the Chiefs play like they have throughout the year, and they play in the playoffs like they have throughout the year, like Pittsburgh just did, it's a war against the Browns. The Chiefs will score between 28 and 45 points in this game. The Browns will score between 17 and 35. I think it's going to be close. I got Chiefs 37, Browns 30.
Man, you got me fired up, Stan Weber. Mm. That was perfect.
Look how much it's snowing.
It is snowing here.
Stan. Nate Bucati, welcome to reality. Thanks for pointing it out to him, Stan.
Thank you, Stan.
Nate was a little unsure.
Well, you taught me, guys. You guys taught me, and Gary Lezak,
Well,
the first rule in weather is look out the window I have right here in the studio.
Right.
Big, big bank of windows right here.
I mean, the wind is gusting. It is wild out here in the Northland. For real, people in the Northland, be careful if you have to get out and about. Thankfully, the St. John kids, no school today for the St. John kids, so we'll be sledding in our cul-de-sac, hopefully, in a couple of hours.
Great weekend, man. Great weekend. I want to say, include 9 days. I like 2 weekends, okay? The 9 days that include last week's playoff games on Saturday and Sunday through this Saturday and Sunday, the best 9 days in football. And they added to it in the NFL with an extra game.
Mm.
But plus, our team's in it. They're the best team. But it is fair to say, all the excitement, get ready. There's also one big fear factor. If the Chiefs don't win a Super Bowl, it is going to be such a punch in the gut. That's what makes it great.
How are you doing?
They're just going to have to go win the Super Bowl. Then
go
do it.
Win the Super Bowl. But if they don't, oh my gosh, how awful will we feel? You've got to win the Super Bowl when you're given your chance. Ask Dan Marino, ask Aaron Rodgers. You can have good teams. Ask Dick Vermeil, ask Marty Schottenheimer. You've got to win when you're the best. So this don't act like it's just a celebration. I'm telling you, there's a ton of pressure. They've got to win it. The Chiefs are absolutely the best team. They've got to win the Super Bowl. The second best team is so far behind them if they play their elite game.
That is Stan Weber. We'll be back after this. Gary Lezak is going effing crazy right now, and he'll do it on Sports Radio 810 WHB.